Welcome back, WNST Towson Baltimore and WNST Baltimore Positive. Don Moeller joining us here, former Baltimore County Executive, as well as former Baltimore County Executive Dutch Rubersberger. Some folks aren't old enough to remember back
when
you
were
doing
it.
1985, you run right Baltimore County Council, and so all these years later, you're doing that. Don, you had an adjunct that you were about to get on. We've green-roomed Dutch before we ordered pizza down here. Pizza John. It's been crazy.
Let's talk, Mayor.
You were talking census, I believe, right?
Liam, we'll get the census in a minute, but I do want Dutch. Dutch alluded before we went to break about his connection to shock trauma, because I've known it's been a passion of Dutch's for years, and it led you, I think, actually to elective office.
Well, first thing, we're talking about positive Baltimore. One of the most positive things we have is Maryland Shock Trauma. It's rated the number one trauma system in the world, and it also are their consultant to all our troops who get injured in Iraq and Afghanistan and in those areas. I was a prosecutor, investigative prosecutor, coming home from work in a police car. I hit the brakes and swerved to the left, and I was in a head-on collision. I didn't have a seatbelt, and I was thrown in the road. This was in 19... I was like 28 years old.
So, hold on. You were a lawyer, or...
I was a prosecutor. Prosecutor.
But you were not a police officer, though.
I was a police officer in Ocean City.
Okay.
When I was going to law school.
Okay.
Okay. And I had my summers off.
Did you hand out citations for open containers?
No, I didn't.
Okay, we're fine. Go ahead. Yeah, we're good.
So, anyhow... I was in this bad accident, and I was on Delaney Valley Road. I was in the road, and the first person on the scene was a nurse, thank goodness, because she stabilized my neck. And I had broken necks. I should be totally paralyzed, but I wasn't. Now, they called a helicopter, and there weren't many helicopters in those days. Shock trauma was a smaller unit at the time. And they landed the helicopter, and the doctor was at the scene. He said, "Don't even put him in. He's gone." Well, thank goodness they didn't. They flew me to shock trauma. And I was in good shape then because I was 28. I was playing lacrosse. At that time, I was a prosecutor. I was playing lacrosse and slow-pitch softball, those type of things. And so when I got to shock trauma, they tried to help me, and they knew I was in real trouble. I ended up having 47 pints of blood. I had like 12, 13 fractures, neck fractures, head injuries. And I know I had brain damage, or I wouldn't be in politics today.
Right, of course. Get him some pizza. Order him some pizza.
That scream you heard was from Dutch's press secretary.
Right, So then, you know, I was there, and then they put me on this drug called Carrari, where you're totally paralyzed. All you can do is hear, feel pain, hear, and think. And they paralyze you because they had a... put respirators. I was breathing on a respirator. And
they don't want you moving, right?
Well, not moving. They don't want your body to have to work. And so what they did, they had me on the Carrari. I was probably out for a couple of days, and anyhow, I was on this Carrari for a while. Well, eventually, you know, I stayed probably in there a month, and you know, I made it. The Lord wouldn't have me. The devil wouldn't take me. But anyhow, so when I got out of there, I went to Dr. Cowley, who started Maryland Shock Trauma. And I said, R.A., he was a match doctor in the Korean War, and he studied trauma. And I said, "You created a system that saved my life. What can I do to help?" And I was a prosecutor at the time. He said, "Run for office. We need all the help we can get." Said, okay, so I ran for state senate. I ran against Senator Frank Kelly. It doesn't happen anymore in politics. We became best friends running against each other. Now, he knew about politics. I didn't know anything about politics at the time.
Why did you get involved?
Because I ran because of shock trauma. Right.
Literally.
That was the whole reason. I was a prosecutor.
28 you were?
28 and I had a 2-year-old son.
You had never thought about being involved in politics ever?
No.
It was not your path.
Not then. I was 28 and
what
a
did
young
you think
prosecutor.
Of politicians then?
I didn't really know many, so I wasn't as focused in the politics as much. But, you know, like everybody else, politicians are always criticized, and there's always somebody who's going to disagree. And, you know, but in the end, the ones that I knew, like my father was good friends with William Donald Schaefer, and, you know, I knew him. He helped mentor me when I became county executive. And I tried to...
What's the best advice he ever gave you?
Emulate, you know, take care of your people, take care of your infrastructure, put money, you know, into the basics, you know, that type of thing. But never give up on your people. and care about you. And he said, there are a lot of people that aren't going to like you, but that doesn't make any difference. You still represent them and do the best you can. I tell people that come to Congress, the new people, they come, they win, they come to Congress, and they stay in Washington. I said, look, you don't get elected in Washington. You get elected in your district, so you better get out and work your district. And just show up somewhere. Go into a restaurant,
you know,
or whatever.
You talk about that showing up, Dutch. One of the stories I remember about you, and it's told quite a bit, and it is really unusual, and you'll remember it well and fill in the blanks, was during your tenure, you had studied that the police were woefully underpaid, and you needed to give them a larger raise than you needed to give fire.
Oh, yeah.
And firefighters were not angry, and your staff said, Dutch, you're not going down to the union hall. And you said, oh, yes, I am. And you went right into the firefighters. Talk a little bit about that decision.
Well, our firefighters were great firefighters, but they were the highest paid in the Baltimore region. And they helped me on my campaign. They were very active, and they were good friends. But as a former prosecutor, and I looked in to see, you know, that the police just were so underpaid in our area. And I said, look, that we got to stop that. And you know, I'm going to bring them up to where I think they need to be. And then the firefighters weren't as happy. I said, wait a minute, guys. You know, you're working four shifts. They're working three. I said, you know, I'm gonna be fair to you, too, but you're the highest paid in the region right now. I said, I got to get our police up where they are. And you know, they were not happy that I gave it. It was one of the biggest raises to the police in the history of our area. And so when I raised their Baltimore County's salaries, they had to do it in the whole region.
Well, that's also a recruitment tool, too, right?
Well, yeah, but it's just...
Well, we want the best police we can get.
You
we
can,
want the best
and that also has to do with training, too.
Right.
And you have to put money into training. You have to do background checks. You need to make sure you don't have situations like we had in the city where either there was not trust with the community there, you had that gang that was stealing money and killing me, whatever they were doing, you know, the Gang of Eight that the feds, you know, have been putting in jail. I mean, these are things. But yeah, the end of the story, we were able to raised, and then, you know, the firefighters were very mad at me, and in fact, it was at a camp. I was giving my budget hearing, and they were there picketing me and signs and all that, and I'm not that way anymore, but I got kind of mad. I was kind of competitive, and I went out and started giving it to them. Well, instead of my budget message being, you know, what's on the news, the TV stations had me fight with the firefighters.
But so, then you guys kissed and made
you
up.
You survived. I mean, you're still here, right?
We kissed and made up, Kevin O'Connor and I and his board. Right. We went down to a Little Italy restaurant. We, you know, we shook hands, we made up. And look, they're all my friends now. And I really support all of public safety in Washington, and I supported the firefighters.
Fair to say that you and Kevin O'Connor, that's like two alpha males.
Oh, we're very good friends, and we still do. I just talked to him a month ago, and you know, but budgeting is about priorities, and you have to make hard decisions. One thing you have to learn when you get in politics, you can't please everybody. You've just got to look at it. You've got to do what you think's right, do the best you can, and then you've got to set your priorities, and you got to live by it.
Well, and then speaking of the budget, that does get us to this other big question, Nestor, that's coming down
so
the road.
So don't forget shock trauma. They're number one in the world. You have a better chance to live here than anyone. And by the way, when I was running for office, Frank and I became best friends running against each other. He beat me. He got on the Senate Budget Committee, and he became the number one advocate for Maryland shock trauma.
It was you, Frank, and Jim Smith, right? You were sort of the big three out there?
That was recently. Jimmy came on our board and really helped us, too. But in the very beginning,
I mean,
it was
back
Frank
then,
and I.
Politically.
It was just Frank. Jimmy went on the bench.
Right.
Frank won. Then I took Jimmy's job. Jimmy went on the bench. Then I became county executive. Jimmy came out of off the bench and became county executive after me. So
for those not paying attention,
I'm all good friends.
Dutch is the only one in the world that calls Jim Smith Jimmy, and he's allowed to call him Jimmy.
Given where you are with the University of Maryland, how you feel, and they've saved your life, I know how I feel.
That was the hospital, yeah.
Right. I mean, I feel that way about Hopkins as well.
Yeah.
The Healthy Holly thing, just as a general, you're a politician. People on the street say all politicians are taking free pizza, they're taking free...
Now, we do have mothers and fathers, too, politicians.
Understood that. Understood.
I'm teasing.
But in the case of this, I pay my taxes, right? I live in the city. I've seen the decay. You and I differ on the Orioles. That's a different show. We'll do that the next time.
Well, let's talk about that.
Let's do that the next time. I want to stay Baltimore.
You don't want to wind me up. You don't want to get started.
You got to stay loyal to your home team.
I'm with you, Dutch. And we'll do another segment with Nestor on another day.
When I get my press credential back, then we'll talk about that, all right? But on Healthy Holly and on corruption. You mentioned the Gang of Eight. You mentioned problems. I have never watched The Wire. I did work with David Simon many moons ago at The Sun. I've never watched it. I only know the storylines as though somehow they play out. You know, later on, things that were in The Wire 20 years ago actually happen. In for real life,
but it happens in urban areas all over the country.
Understood. Right. How do we make Baltimore a better place in that way with the healthy Hollies? And now we have a lack of trust where there already was a lack of trust. I think whoever the next mayor needs to be, and one of the reasons we put Baltimore Positive together is to say, who is going to be the who's going to be the next Governor Schaefer? Who's going to be the next person that says we're going to clean up the harbor, we're going to get people here, we're going to promote things, we're going to have city fairs, we're going to have artscapes, we're going to have light cities. They're going to be safe.
We do have those. And we have those fairs, and the communities are trying hard to keep it together. But you need leadership at the top. Look, I knew the mayor. I've known all the past mayors. And, you know, I think what happened to this mayor, she really had poor judgment. You know, I'm sure when she started out with the Healthy Holly issue, and I'm not sure where the criminal involvement is, if there is or not, we'll find out later. But the bottom line, I think she felt that I'm going to be on a fixed income and, you know, that I need to have something. And she came up with this idea. It turned out to be very poor judgment. And you know, you have ethics. And, you know, when I was an investigative prosecutor, the politicians that got in trouble, that was really their mindset. They really didn't make representing their people first. And maybe they shouldn't have gotten into politics. Because I believe, and I can say this as a former investigative prosecutor before, you know, I got into politics, we take care of our corruption here in the state of Maryland. If there's somebody doing bad, we eventually bring them to the table. If you look at the past,
I hope
we're
going to do that in Washington too. I should say that.
Well, yeah, a lot of it is.
So, what's going on down at Washington? We want to feel like there's justice. Yeah, we really do.
But if it's Washington, it's not what they do there usually. If it's a corrupt U.S. senator or congressman, it's usually the U.S. attorneys who deal with that in their jurisdiction. The things that we deal with in Washington, like I specialize in national security, Iraq, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Russia, China. I specialize in cybersecurity. You know, I represent NSA, so. It's a very dangerous world out there, and we do that at the federal level. Where in the state and local level, it's more of the crime and the corruption and that. And look, you know, one bad person makes it look bad for all of us.
That's my point, Dutch. And Nestor,
well, that's why I said it.
Nestor's heard me say it. I was so angry over what's recently happened in the city because I think it taints us all. And from where I sit, it's pretty simple. You've certainly lived your life that way. I like to think I have. Pretty simple rules. You don't lie. You don't cheat. You don't take things that don't belong to you. You know, you've got Jamie Lennon on
your staff. Trust and relationship.
Trust him sitting out there. And I can remember when Jamie was a reporter, and I had one rule, not only with my staff, with the department heads, just as you did. You never lie to the press.
Well, lying comes back.
You don't get to.
You just don't say it.
It's like you say to your kids. I say to my kids, you don't get to. Once you've lied to me, I assume you're willing to lie. Over and over again. So I think what I hear
next. Get angry. We're just talking about being lied to.
I do get angry.
I can see it.
I do get angry. Lying pushes my buttons. And that's why, Nestor, when you zero in with Dutch and you're talking about what do we do? And we say we're going to ask this question of everybody that comes on here. What do we do to make Baltimore better? How do we stop just talking about it, Dutch, and make it happen? Well, what has to happen?
Well, you got to start with the basics. We said it before, and I alluded to it. You got to start in your families and your communities. You've got to have strong communities. You need government to assist to help you that. If you've got a community where you have boarded up homes and all, you've got to turn that around. You have to have a plan. You want investment to come in to try to, you know, build a new neighborhood, build a new town. But you also have to remember, this is where government comes in. There are a lot of people who are poor. You know, they're on welfare. They're usually single mother with a lot of kids. So you've got to take care of that too. So, and that's what we did in Baltimore County. When we got rid of these places, we made sure we had a department in Baltimore County who would take each family and work with them and get them into a better place to live and to raise their kids and whatever. So it starts with the basics. But you've got to start positive. I love Baltimore. I mean, I was in San Diego because I deal with a lot of Chinese-Russia issues, and I had to go to a kind of a semi-classified hearing in California. It was San Diego. And when I was going to the airport to get back on the plane, I said, "Baltimore, that's where all that crime is."
Actually, we hear it all the time.
I get tired of hearing that, Dutch.
So what we have to do, you got to stand up for who we are. What are we proud of in Baltimore? We should be proud of our history. We should be proud of a lot of our communities. We should be proud of our Orioles and
Ravens. Our hospitals, I would say our hospitals, we have probably colleges the two, and universities.
We're in probably no other place in the country has two better teaching hospitals than Hopkins and the University of Maryland. I mean, that's who we are. And not only saving people's lives, but research that they do there and helping other people. There's so many positive things about Baltimore. In fact, a lot of the people who work on the Hill, they take a train for $6 to live in Baltimore because they like the quality of life in Baltimore, and they're living downtown. The problems we have are on the east side, west side, and a lot of it is drugs. The majority of it is drugs. Young kids who join gangs and don't have a lot of maturity, they got the guns, and you know, they just shoot you if you look cross-eyed, and that's what hurts. And yet, you know, you really have to look in the city at the African-American community. They need help to bring themselves to a level where they need to be every day. So we have to really focus, and we do that in Baltimore County, focus on these families and these kids, but especially the city. If you grow up in a bad neighborhood and you've got drug dealers all around you, and you're a young kid, you're gonna say, hey, yeah, I'll deliver this or I'll do that. Yeah, I can make some money. That's how I live. So you know, it's a team that has to come together, but it's got to start with leadership at the top. Infrastructure in the city is falling apart. I hate to see that. You know, that's not what you want. You create infrastructure. You take care of your infrastructure. That'll create jobs to take care of it.
No, these are major issues. We've got to find solutions. We're coming up on a census. I know you and your colleagues census. Are very worried because the census, which people don't understand, has real implications for Baltimore City.
Well, it's a revenue generator, literally, right? I mean, this is how we accumulate money by having people, right? Mm. Literally.
No question. And look, so many people are concerned about the immigration issue. Believe me, I know this issue pretty well. I was just down at the border last week to really get to see what the issue. The problem now we have is really volume. What happens, you have Guatemala and you have Honduras and El Salvador. Those countries are out of control. I mean, it's the bad guys, the corrupt cops. I mean, and a lot of these families, they feel the only hope to life is the United States.
Literally to walk to America. Literally to walk to America. Literally.
Yeah, and so what happens, we need to restructure our whole border patrol and how people come in. We need 1,000 more judges. People that we catch, we keep them here, and you can't keep them. Could stay here for 3 years without a hearing. Those are the type of things that are happening. We need technology. You know, if Trump would stop talking about the wall, and talk about border security, part of border security is the wall. You need two walls. You know why? And I learned that when I was down with the Border Patrol. If they breach the first wall, and it's usually families and a lot of kids, then if you have a second wall, and it's usually a big fence, not a wall, which isn't that expensive, it gives Border Patrol the time to come between there in the first area and the second area because their technology shows how many people and where they are. And a lot of this happens at night. But here's an example where it's about picking priorities and doing what's right. And just to say the wall, that feeds you know, Trump's base. But that's not solving the problem, and we have to solve the problems. And believe me, if you know me, I'm low to my party maybe at election time, but I'm very bipartisan. I have as many friends on the Republican side as I do the Democratic side. And, you know, I'm an endgame guy, and I think if most people would start in local government, like I was blessed to have those jobs that I had, you it's not about the philosophical issues, it's about getting things done every day. And that's not happening as much in Washington as it should.
Well Dutch, talk, and I know we need to take another break here soon, but talk a little bit about the way you just described yourself and your ability now not only to try to navigate what's happening on the Republican side of the aisle, which is increasingly moving to the right.
Disturbing.
But at the same time, you've got the pressure in Congress from a very progressive group of new members on the Democratic side. How do you, as somebody who's been down there now for 9 terms, how do you try to bridge that gap and bring all these folks together?
Well, look, if you really look at how you get majority in Congress, it's the moderates. So whoever wins the moderate seats. So I'm a moderate, and there weren't many moderates left on the Democratic side, and the Republicans were able to win a lot of seats, moderate seats, both ways. The far right and far left, they can get knocked out in their primaries, but in the general election, you know, they have the safe seats. But my issue, like you said, even in elections, I'll go right into my opponent's neighborhood and shake hands and do whatever. And so AOC, as an example, you know, her politics is not my politics. But I was able to you know, I went and talked to her and said, what's your agenda? I mean, you just can't come in here, you're in front page Time magazine. That doesn't mean you're going to get what you want. But there are things that you and I can agree on. Let's talk about it. And one of them, you know, this Green New Deal. Look, I wasn't for the Green New Deal in the beginning. Because I said, look, I can't, Medicare for all, we can't afford it. There's, it costs us billions of dollars, trillions of dollars. And it's a good concept, and I'd like to see it, but we have to take care of what we have now, especially with our seniors and pre-existing conditions and those type of things. But, you know, so I really didn't look at the Green New Deal. Well, Sarbanes wrote a memo to a bunch of us and said, you've got to look at this thing. It's not what you think it is. And I read it again, and the Green New Deal that's out there now, it's nothing but suggestions for a plan.
It's aspirational.
There's
right?
absolutely no, who right. would, who wouldn't want, you know, good medical
insurance?
How
much of that
insurance?
Is infrastructure as opposed to medical or education?
Well, it's all.
Because when I hear Green New Deal, what? That sounds like this thousand points of light and that's that doesn't have any.
Well, that's exactly what I thought. But when I saw what it was about, and it didn't talk about Medicare for all. It talked about the basic things that you would want for your community. It was about a plan. And I said, look, I will support this, the fact that it's not mandatory, but I'm an appropriator. So I want to see how much it's going to cost. And a lot of these things will never happen because of the cost factor. Vermont and Colorado, on this Medicare for all, where everybody has Medicare, they passed it in their states. And when they went to implement it, they had to back off of it because they would have had raised taxes.
They couldn't afford
hundreds of dollars. No one can afford it.
But it's a great. This is what's great about
it's just
this,
a philosophy.
But we're
not doing anything now. So let's get a plan to move forward.
Right. And this is where the discussions I think help move things forward because and we don't all have to agree because my instincts are in support of a Medicare for all type plan or at least and I know others. I know Senator Van Hollen and others talk about a public option. But in terms of trying to move forward because, and I think I know you agree with this, Dutch, people in your district, we can't have people having to make choices about whether they buy their blood pressure medication or whether they pay their rent.
Yeah, but
we
but,
just can't have
but,
that.
But when my other side of the aisle attacks Obamacare, that's what you're doing. You're taking away from people, and people like Obamacare now. They want, if you have a heart problem and you have a cancer problem, they'll take care of that. So but so many people get their information from either Fox or MSNBC or whatever, and you know a lot of that you got to follow the facts. It's like the thing with Mueller. I respect Mueller. I was what they call the Gang of Eight, and the Gang of Eight was the president of the Senate, the ranking member of the Senate, the senator. The Speaker of the House, and then the ranking member, and then I was the head guy on intelligence, ranking member, and I had a counterpart, and the same with the Senate. And Gang of Eight got the most sensitive information, so I worked very closely with Bob Mueller, and Bob Mueller was a very very good person, honest person, a straight person, and whatever. And everybody was knocking him on the other side of the aisle, thinking, well, how could you do this and whatever. But when Bob Mueller came out with what he did, and then now this attorney general is saying something different, now the country's all split again.
Right.
And this every time you turn around, I ask my staff, what's Trump's tweet of the day? Well, you know, if he would start focusing and communicate on what's right for America and then stop playing to the base. And by the way, we do that on our side.
That's
of the
not a
too.
Part of his personality. It's not part of his psychology.
Well, it concerns me.
I've never heard the word love. I've never heard anything aspirational.
Well, but
the racism
I'm not going to knock Trump. Well, I'll stand up to Trump if I think he's wrong. But I think, you know, if you look at Trump, he's very narcissistic. You know, I'm the best. I'm this. And I think we have to go beyond that and stick with the facts. And a lot of my Republican friends who are in high positions there, I think they're more worried about their race because their race as far as running for
political
office.
Race.
And because the base stays, his base has stayed with Trump. And when you call him on the lies, the verified lie, oh, that's just Trump being Trump. Well, maybe that's where it is. So the way I look at it, he's our president. I'm going to do whatever I can that I think is in the best interest of my constituents, and I'm going to work around a lot of the issues, and I'm working with Republicans on a lot of the issues, and they're working around it too. But you know, we've had all different types of presidents. I'm just worried about our because I specialize in national security. Our relationship with Europe is not good now. We haven't had a world war since World War II, and you know, the leadership in Europe don't really care about Trump anymore. And I'm very worried about his relationship with Putin. Any way you look at it, I'm worried about that. I'm concerned about that. Right, Putin's probably the most dangerous person in the world. China, by the way, has got more money, and they want to be the most powerful country in the world by 2049, and they think they can take us over because of cyber, by the way. So where I'm going with all this is we come and go, when somebody like some of the senators that I just heard yesterday on TV, Lindsey Graham. Well, it's over. We're not looking at it. Well, my issue is
not over for me.
Follow.
Yeah, and it's not over for me.
Not over for me.
But for a lot of people,
right?
A lot of people who didn't.
A lot of people who live in this community. But the issue there is follow the facts. Now, I was trained as a prosecutor. Follow the facts. And by the way, if you're talking about something that is criminal, you've got to prove somebody guilty beyond a reasonable doubt to moral certainty. That's our system of government, and that's what it should be. But you know, you've got to follow the facts. I want to make sure we follow the facts, and that Trump is not using his job to make us as a country not as strong or to be the best we can. That's what concerns me.
Perfect time, I think, to take a break here at Pizza John's. Get some pizza.
Get some pizza.
We'll be back and wrap this up. Congressman Dutch Ruppersberger.
Okay.
I lost my There Goes My Hero sign. I was going to hold it up.
We are swabbing.
I think I lost it. Right, we're swabbing for There Goes My Hero. There's Hero Palooza coming up on June 9th. I'll get that out. Dutch Ruppersberger out here. We're going to order some pizza. What are you getting on your pizza? You pepperoni? What are you, meat sauce? Anything. He said anything, I'll take. We're WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, and we're back for more right after this with Dutch Ruppersberger and Don Moeller.